X marks the spot for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The podcast that hopes Democrats don't Obama-size Medicare. He thinks Peaky Blinders is a very silly name for a show. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Wow, it's time for another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. At some point, my nephew from Canada, Drew McMillan, is going to have all new intros because I sent a whole batch of them over to Randy. So you're going to be hearing new content at the beginning of each episode. But Drew is still going to be reading them in the inimitable style in which he has executed all of his other duties for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Thank you for joining us today. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Arizona. It's going to be pushing 100 down in Phoenix. Tomorrow, the next day, it should be in the low hundreds, but here on the mountain, it's slightly less than that. So we'll be in the 90s for the next few days. The sun is shining brightly and couldn't be a nicer time to talk about Medicare. Unless, of course, you don't want to talk about Medicare, in which case, leave the talking to us. And when I say us, I'm talking about me, and I'm talking about Randy Carson, my knob twister. That sounds dirtier than it really is. The knobs he twists are electrical knobs that involve audio quality. And audio quality is what we're all about because we enjoy doing a good podcast. Randy, how you doing today?
Doug, I'm doing well. I really am doing well. As you say, it's a nice day. I can't complain about anything as far as the weather. And I won't complain about anything else because as soon as you do, karma will come back around.
It'll just happen again twice as bad next time you complain about it. So I understand that completely. Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so those of you who were with us last podcast, you may remember that I failed miserably to stump the insurance expert, and that really, really bothered me. So I have a whole line of new questions, none of which have anything to do with Medicare, but I just want to see how far outside the line Mr. Jones's knowledge can go.
Well, the students of Medicare right now are hugely disappointed. So, but the rest of us are fine with it, so go right ahead.
One question.
Ask
one
away.
Question. This one is more of a surprising fun fact for anybody that's interested in fun facts. Your heart pumps about how many gallons of blood each day?
Oh, each day. I was hoping you were going to say each year, but no, each day. So now I have to divide by 365. And is this a leap year? I have to divide by 366. I don't know. Let's go with 20. How's that?
2,000 gallons of blood.
Okay, well, now, since I don't have 2,000 gallons of blood in my body, if I were to cut my arteries open, it wouldn't take very long to run out of blood, I'm guessing.
No, it wouldn't. But I just had to see, I just had to feel better about my fun fact.
Well, I was 1% of the correct answer. 20 is 1% of 2,000.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. So any other ways to embarrass me today? My lack of knowledge about?
No. that was not meant to embarrass you. It was meant to make myself feel better.
I am a trivia buff. I do enjoy trivia in certain categories, of course. I'm not good in all categories. Like you asked me a question that the answer was the question was about the best Oscar nominee or winner of 1965. Not the King and I, what was it? Sound of Music. Yeah. I'm not going to be real good with musicals. I'm not going to be real good with current entertainment and things like that.
That's a misnomer. Current entertainment.
Yeah, that would be.
I'm not sure there is any, but okay. Going ahead. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and get going? Because I know there's a fun thing in the future.
All right.
And it will save my bacon up in Cave Creek the MLM mailbag.
That's exactly what I had planned to do. I was actually going to read some articles, which I know everybody, you know, gathers around and they get in their Indian cross-legged position to listen to me read Medicare articles. But today I thought we would do more mailbag stuff because Randy wants to go hang out this weekend at the bars in Cave Creek, and he's going to have a tough time doing that if all the other patrons are angry for not having done enough mailbag items. So let me start with a letter I got from Richard. Richard has a multisyllabic last name. I'm not even going to try, but he said, I enjoyed your book and appreciate the insight you've given me in choosing my pending Medicare enrollment. He says, you do not mention supplemental plan pricing, specifically attained age versus issue age versus community pricing, which is really community rating, but you can't blame a guy for trying. Can you give the pros and cons of these pricing strategies to help choosing which one is the best way to go? Thanks. Now, this is an excellent question that doesn't come up very often, but when it does, some people are just convinced as all heck that this is an important consideration. And in fact, for lack of anything more substantial to talk about, often the books that the government puts out about Medicare supplements dwell on this as well. Now, there are three different types of pricing strategies that the insurance companies that sell Medicare supplement plans use in pricing their products. The first one, let me talk about the last of the three that Richard mentioned, and that was community rating. In community rating, it's basically you've got men and women paying exactly the same amount of money. So in a product like Medicare supplement, the women would normally pay less, but if you've got a community rating situation, a state demands that the people selling Medicare supplements in their state, like California, for instance, or New York, some of the Northeast states, you're going to find that the women have to pay more than they would normally have to pay, and the men get to pay less. Typically, younger people, women pay more for health insurance because they tend to need more medical treatment, and men pay less for health insurance because they don't like hanging around doctor's offices. But as they get older, as they transition into Medicare, the roles reverse, or the statistics are reversed, and women are actually less likely to rack up a lot of medical bills, so their premiums are lower. Men typically have more problems that need to be treated intensively, their premiums are higher. But in a community rating situation, the men and the women have to pay the same amount. So, you know, one sex gets a short end of the stick, the other sex gets a break. Now, the other two pricing methodologies, attained age and issue age. Those two rely on the age of the person when they purchase their insurance coverage, or they rely on the age of the person each year. So the theory goes that a person buying insurance at age 65 is going to have a break every year because his rate was locked in at age 65, and the company will only raise rates if they need to maintain their profit margins. The other side of that coin is the attained age, in which case the company will only raise rates once a year based on the new age, the older, more likely to need medical treatment age of their client. Okay, so it looks like issue age would be the best bet because issue age is going to stay the same from age whatever you bought the policy into the future, unless the company needs money to stay profitable. Whereas that poor attained age guy, he's going to have to pay more every year because he's getting older. So each year he gets a letter from the insurance company saying, hey, we're going to increase your rate. Sometimes it might be 2%. Sometimes it could be 8%. Well, I got some news for anybody listening to this. Ignore it. Do not be fooled by this this made up soporific excuse for doing actuarial calculations. In reality, if an insurance company is doing either of those, attained age or issue age, what's really going to drive the cost of the product is the normal things that will always drive the cost for the product. What is their profit goal? What is their profit position? What is their loss ratio? What is the sales success that they've had with this product? Do they want to sell more product in a given geographical area, or do they want to sell less product because they've got too much exposure to risk? These two rating schemes are something that detail-oriented people like to talk about, and they think they're very important because the government publications think they're, you know, fool them into thinking they're really important. But in reality, they are not that different, because you're not going to find a huge difference in price between two companies that have exactly the same product but charge rates based on issue age versus attained age. Now, let's see what I told Richard when I answered him. I said, "Thanks for writing, Mr. So-and-so. I assume your question is really about whether it's possible to predict the future cost of a supplement plan that might have a competitive rate today. With the exception of community rating," remember, that's the one where men and women and people of all ages have to pay the same price. Community rating could be not just the sexes, but it also, the definition can include having everybody from 65 to 105 pay exactly the same rate. Haven't seen it, but it's possible that the definition includes that. So with the exception of community rating, I have never observed these elements to be very important in the overall scheme of things. Jurisdictions that mandate community rating are forcing companies to use a crystal ball to predict what age and sex their future customers will be. Sometimes they hit it, and other times they're way off and need to impose rate adjustments. As for issue age and attained age, you would have to be an actuary with a massive computer to perceive any long-term benefit or drawback. The bottom line is that the companies need to make a certain amount of profit to stay in business, so they will price their products and adjust rates accordingly. We customers will ultimately have to either pay what they ask or move to a different insurer or plan if we are able, meaning if we're qualified by health to be able to go to a different company. I continued, the one factor that can make a difference in future rate increases is a product in which the insured has a larger share of the risk. In the case of a high deductible Plan G, or in the older Plan F, the pressure to increase rates will generally be less intense. One company I offer to people who prefer low rates, high deductible plans, has a stellar track record of small or infrequent rate increases on those plans, while their premiums on the regular supplements are no bargains at all. Without being privy to their inside rating philosophy, I would guess that they use profits on one product type to keep the cost of the other, the high deductible products, more competitive. Ultimately, it's speculation for me within the larger framework of the need for a reasonable insurance company profit. I hope this helps. Write anytime you think I might be of assistance. And I'm guessing that it didn't help him, because I never heard from Richard again. But that's the bottom line. There are people who have, Becky is a person we've talked about. Becky, she's one of my valued clients, she and her husband, Lester. And she, when she first came to me, she said, "I only want to consider Medicare supplements that have," I think it was issue age that she wanted. And I tried and I tried and I tried to convince her that that was not an important factor, and that there were other things to look at when choosing a Medicare supplement plan. She eventually came around to my way of thinking, but it was a struggle. She and I developed a habit of communicating by email every day, sometimes a couple of times a day, because she was convinced that this was an important consideration in the future cost of the product. And she knew that she might be trapped, because if you have a stroke or a heart attack or some kind of health problem down the road, you're not going to be able to qualify to move to a different carrier or a different plan offered by the same carrier you've got. So it looks on the surface as though this would be an important consideration so that your rates don't go sky high once you've purchased the product. But in reality, it's a red herring. The company wants to stay profitable so that they can be selling, so that they will not go out of business, but they also want to have competitive rates in most areas so that they will be able to bring in new clients, new insureds that will be healthier because they'll be younger, and they want to bring in the new blood all the time to keep the cost down, to spread the risk over a lot of people. And that's what you're going to find. The company has to remain profitable, and mostly they want to remain competitive. Those are the two factors at work, not their rating methodology. So I don't know how much time I burned up, Randy. Have I come anywhere close to the time you had in mind for our next contest?
You have 4 minutes and 24 seconds left.
All righty.
I think that's time for another bagger.
Okay, let's do that then. This gentleman's name is John. And John wrote, this was last January 8th, right after New Year's. Doug, love your book. Now, what a guy. Right there, that qualifies it to be in our mailbag readings. But anyway, he said, I'm turning 65. On February 9th, I just enrolled in a PDP, which is what we call prescription drug plan. I got my Medicare card, which showed my A and B start dates. So I presume I'm already enrolled in both A and B. Is that right? So all I need to do now is buy a supplement, which Medicare.gov calls a Medigap plan. Am I right? Sorry to sound slow. And this gentleman's in Florida. So I answered him, you are absolutely correct about the things that need to be done, and you are very close to wrapping everything up. Since you liked the book, should I assume that you are a believer in the high deductible concept, or would you like to consider the higher cost Medicare Supplement Plan G as well? Eventually, I will be completing the application on your behalf, so I have attached a questionnaire to help me do just that. At your convenience, please fill it out and return it to me. If security is a concern, leave off any sensitive information, and we can do that over the telephone. Looking forward to assisting you in this process. And frankly, I don't know that I ever heard from him again. It's possible that I did, and I've got his next response in a different stack. I'm going to have to look, because I hate to let loose ends hang around. And he seemed like he was ready to buy. And I'm hoping that I did not overlook his desire to do that. And then we have an item from the mailbag from Ken. And he says, hi, Doug, what a great book and guide. Kudos for a top-notch publication. My wife and I are firmly in the land of Minnesota, where our politicians decided to go rogue. Might you be able to provide a bit more info on how we can best proceed? Are the F and G plans still the best way to go? My wife has quite a list of meds. I think it's 9 or 10, and I'm close behind with 8 prescriptions. Thanks in advance for any advice you're able to provide. And this is from Lynn and Ken. So I said, dear Lynn and Ken, my advice is get out of Minnesota. Now, if you can't do that, I will be happy to help you deal with Medicare in order to tell you what the plans are. The plans I recommend would cost. I need some information from each of you. Attached is a short questionnaire for that purpose. Don't worry about any sensitive information you don't feel comfortable divulging. As you probably know, Minnesota plans are different than those in the rest of the state, so this will be a learning process for all of us. Regular plans F and G don't appear to be on the list, but we can get pretty close. Drug plans are the same in Minnesota as everywhere else. So what I suggest, if you like to have fun with computers, is to go to the government website and see what the cheapest plans would be for each of you. If you prefer, I can do it for you, but I would need a very complete list of your drugs, dosages, et cetera, as well as your favorite pharmacies with addresses. Send me those questionnaires and I will dig up the best alternatives I can find for you. Thank you for writing. And thanks for the kind words about the book. I didn't hit him with the baseball bat of customer reviews like I normally do. So then Ken writes back and says, Doug, I appreciate the quick reply. Cannot leave right now. The grandkids are close. I'll send info as soon as I get it pulled together. Thank you. And then a couple of days later, I said, this form may help you organize the drug information I need. I ran across a pretty good blank questionnaire for people that want help choosing the proper drug plan. So I sent a copy of that to Ken. And I said, this form may help you organize the drug information you need to select the least expensive drug plan for you. By the way, my children moved to a warmer climate, so the grandchildren do not have us trapped in wintry, frozen Illinois every year. Now, that may have irritated Ken because I never heard from him again, or the grandchildren became too much for him. Anyway, that's got to put us over the finish line, I would think, Randy.
We are done.
Okay.
The gas is gone and we're gliding it in.
Did we do enough to keep your compatriots at the Buffalo Chip happy?
Oh, I absolutely. I believe I'm good to go for at least another week or two.
Wonderful.
Although we have to keep feeding the monster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time on that comparison of rating computation strategies. So if they aren't down with that, then they're going to get over this pretty quickly and be antsy again. So.
I can just envision this. I walk into the chip. Everybody's sitting there with the little handheld calculators, you know, checking your work.
Sure. Sure. Now, let me ask you this. When are they going to start the bull riding again?
You know, that's a great question. I'm going to have to find out because, as you know, it's really, really difficult to get a bull to wear a face mask.
Absolutely. And frankly, if I'm a bull, I'm going to try to kill you before I'd actually wear one.
Yeah, the fun part for the bull is to see how many bones they can break, how quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And frankly, that makes the audience cheer and stomp their feet. So
everybody does that.
Yep. Everybody enjoys it. Not just the bull, but so I'm hoping that they get it going again. That was what brought them back from the brink. That place used to look like a ghost house until somebody came up with the idea of bull riding.
Yeah. And now it's on Wednesdays and Friday nights.
Yeah. Wednesday is like practice night. Friday night is the real deal.
Yeah, the bulls are just warming up on Wednesday night. And for those of you who haven't been there, these are not just your normal neighborhood bulls that somebody brings in. These are the real deal.
Some of them are better than others, though. My favorite ride that I saw a couple of years ago was this guy hopped up on the bull. He's wearing a helmet. He's ready to go. And the bull comes charging out of the chute, takes a couple of looks around, and then walks docilely right back into the chute. He says, I liked it better in there than I do it out there.
Well, I'm only required to do 40 hours a week, buddy. Okay, yep. My time is up.
Yeah.
Well, I thank everyone for joining us. Truly, we enjoy every minute of it, because without you, it's just really pretty quiet in the house. You know, the applause isn't, you know, necessarily what it needs to be. And that's what fires Doug up. And you should look over when there's no applause and he's just got this look on his face like, oh, man, I wish there was some more noise going on. So you guys did really good today. And I've got one thing to mention to you. And that is that Doug, as president and CEO of MLM Air, would like to announce that we have a whole new fleet of airplanes.
Okay, now this is news to me, so.
Yeah, we got some really good bargains on a whole flight of Boeing 707s.
Oh, okay, the very first Boeing passenger jets ever built, huh?
Yeah, they came out in 1954, so you guys on this, you know, you're about that age. I'm a few years older than you guys, but 1954, this is right down your alley, so feel free to get all your tickets you want on MLM Air. You'll recognize the aircraft.
Gee, those things were brand new when people actually dressed up to go flying. They didn't wear their pajamas. And when the meals were actually like Stouffer's frozen entrees, they were not, cardboard sandwiches and stuff.
And you got an actual set of silverware.
silverware and cocktails that were tasty and service with a smile. I remember those days of flying.
Yeah. And there was a cigarette ashtray on the arm of the deal.
And there were free cigarettes given to you with the meal.
Yeah.
Little four packs of cigarettes. Boy, and all those planes, I think, are parked down at Marana. You know, most of the way to Tucson, you can see the tail fins sticking up in the air as you drive by on Interstate 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to go down there. I think somebody told me one time that there's a tour you can actually get on somehow.
I did not know about that.
I don't know whether it's true or not, but I would love, I'm an aircraft guy, so I would love to go down and see that stuff.
Well, that I'll have to find out about that and add it to my list. I've got a whole Tucson itinerary. And when we go down there with visiting friends, we say, would you like to do this or this? Would you like to do this or this? Would you like to stay 3 days or 4 days? And we generally show people a pretty good time in Tucson. There's a lot of fun stuff to do there.
Yeah. My friends, when I take them down to Tucson, seem to want to go to the nature preserves and look at the plants.
Well, there's the...
Which is not one of my top of the list items.
Once you've seen them 10 times, they don't look any different.
Oh, look, a cactus. Oh, my God, that's a cactus.
You have to put yourself in their view. You know, they've been looking at snow and ice, and now you can show them a cactus. Also, the Desert Museum. You know, it's not exciting for me because I'm not a nature kind of guy. But I do know that if I go there once every 5 years, there's all new stuff. And so they do keep spending money on it and making it bigger.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, I think we better tell the folks, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, folks.
We are glad you were here. Thoroughly enjoy every week we do this. And we're looking forward to seeing you next time. But in the meantime, you have spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. And as you've just heard, the guy that knows Tucson like the back of his hand.
Bye-bye.